Ezra Dixon's home was located on the northernmost of the hills south of El Despoblado. Jason spotted it as they approached. He had also spotted quite a few cattle, and they looked like fine animals. A sprawling log structure with two stories had perched atop the rise, reminding Jason of medieval castles he had seen pictured in books. A much more rustic castle than those European ones, to be sure, but it was an impressive sight anyway.
The place wasn't always so big and fancy. When the boss built it, it wasn't much bigger than a line shack. He added on to it, though, bit by bit, until it was what it is now. Sort of like the whole slash D, best ranch in the territory.
A creek emerged at the base of the hill where the ranch house was located. The outbuildings were all down there, including a bunkhouse, a large barn, and a blacksmith shop. Several sprawling corrals were near the barn. As the riders approached, Jason saw a man breaking horses in one of those corrals. The bronc being ridden at the moment was a big black, and it leapt and sunfished and twisted like mad in a frantic attempt to dislodge the unwelcome human on its back. As the group of riders drew even with the corral, the bronc finally won its battle.
Oh, ouch!
I don't see any of you rannies doing any better. If you think you can ride that damn devil horse, why don't you climb in there and give it a try?
Take it easy, Ord. We didn't mean nothing by it. Just that it must have hurt the land like that.
The cowboy who had been bucked off hadn't gotten up yet. He was moving around a little, so Jason thought he was probably just stunned by the fall. But it was possible he could have been injured more seriously than that.
Yeah, well, take these two on up to see the boss. I'm gonna go see if Will's hurt.
Kirby peeled off from the group and rode over to the corral, while the other five men kept Jason and Wash moving toward the house. A path led up the 100 yards or so to the top of the hill. By the time the group of riders reached the end of it, a couple of big dogs standing on the porch of the house were announcing their arrival.
Quiet, you two!
A man stepped out of the house. His white hair and weathered face were indicators of his age, but the movements of his lithe, wiry body were those of a younger man. Jason guessed from the man's arrogant bearing and defiant gaze that he was looking at Ezra Dixon.
What now? Who are these two yahoos?
They say they want to talk to you, boss. The kid claims to be the marshal of that settlement that sprung up about 10 miles north of here.
It's no claim. I'm the legally appointed marshal of Fury.
That's what I think of your legal appointment, boy. Town's got no right to be there, and neither of you. Now speak your piece and get the hell off my range before I send you back to that settlement covered with tarn feathers.
Earlier today, you tried to kill a couple of men working on a ranch west of here.
Couple of trespassers who had no right to be there, putting up a house and barn on my range and calling it theirs. What'd they do? Come crying to the law?
I was asked to look into the matter. That's why I'm here. If what you're saying is true, then they didn't have a right to be there. That still doesn't give you the right to try to kill them and burn the place down.
I ain't in the habit of lying. Of course it's true. That's my range. Has been for more than 10 years. I come out here before the war. Almost before there were any other white men in this part of the territory. Fought Apaches, bandits from below the border, and bad weather. I buried a wife and 2 sons here. Don't you ever go saying this ain't my range.
My understanding is that most of this area is open range, that it belongs to whoever claims it. If you file the legal claim to the place where Matt McDonald is building his ranch, then I'll tell him he's out of luck and that he has to get off of it. But if you didn't, then he's got as much right to it as anybody else, including you.
You're talking about a damn piece of paper, ain't you, boy?
Pieces of paper are what civilization depends on, Mr. Dixon.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what's wrong with it. Nobody gives a damn anymore about anything except what some blasted paper pushers say. Nobody cares that I watered this ground with my blood. And I ain't ashamed to say it, with my tears, too. All they want is a damn piece of paper.
Ain't it the truth?
Whose side are you on?
If it's any of your business, mister, which it ain't to my way of thinking, I don't have the paper you're talking about. I never needed it before. And I don't need it now.
Then you don't have legal title to the land that McDonald claimed?
Didn't I just say that? You deef as well as stupid.
In that case, I have to tell you that if you or your men bother Matt McDonald again, I'll report it to the county sheriff and get some deputies in here to force you to comply with the law.
That's supposed to scare me. Boy, You got a lot to learn about the sort of man you're dealing with here. You tell that fella, MacDonald, you say his name is, you tell him that unless he gets off my range, I'm gonna kill him. And it won't matter none to him what the law does about it, cause he'll already be buzzard bait.
You can be arrested for threatening to kill somebody, you know.
Not by you. Not unless I do it in that town of yours. I know that much law, sonny. Your badge don't mean shit out here.
Are we free to go?
Sure. Go on. I'm sick of looking at you anyways.
What about the town itself? Do you want everybody there to pack up and leave too?
Nah, I reckon the settlement can stay. It's right there close to the trail the wagon trains use on their way to California. Not really good grazing land thereabouts.
What about the people who are putting in farms outside of town?
As long as they don't come too far in this direction, I got no problem with that. Even though I don't have much use for farmers in general, you understand? Can't see how anybody want to make a living grubbing around in the dirt.
Before Jason could say anything in response to that, the sound of hoofbeats made him look around. Kirby and the cowboy, who had been trying to ride the big black horse in the corral, had walked up the path to the house, with Segundo leading his mount. The cowboy with him was limping.
Will? Will, honey, you all right?
A strong brown hand reached up and tugged the cowboy's hat off, letting long, dark brown hair spill out from under it. Without the broad brim of the hat shading the face, Jason saw that it belonged to a woman, and a mighty good-looking one at that. Even smudged with dust and dirt, she was pretty enough to take a fella's breath away.
Oh, I'm fine, Pa. Just twisted my leg a little when that devil horse threw me.
Ugh. Damn it, I told you, you don't have to ride him. Let somebody else do it.
I'm the best hand you got when it comes to busting horses. It's my job.
You're staring, son.
Jason supposed he was. It was hard not to stare. The woman was young, probably a year or two younger than Jason. Tall and slender, but not skinny. The man's shirt and denim trousers she wore did a pretty good job of concealing her shape, but Jason could see enough to know that she was built like a woman was supposed to be built, with all the right curves and all the right places. Wash wasn't the only one who had noticed Jason looking at her. She turned her head, and her brown eyes met Jason's gaze squarely.
What are you looking at, mister?
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude. It's just that when I saw somebody trying to ride that horse, I figured it was a man.
Here? Well, I could sit a saddle before I could walk. Isn't that right, Pa?
It is for a fact. I never saw nobody who took to riding like you did, girl. Not even your brothers. God rest their poor souls.
I'm Will Dixon, short for Wilhelmina. But don't you call me that, or I'll have to whip you.
Will, step away from those men. They ain't here on no friendly visit. The young one's a lawman. Says I got no right to range that's always been mine ever since we come here.
Is that true?
I was trying to get your father to understand.
Oh, he understands all right. He's forgotten more about this land than a fella like you will ever know. I reckon he told you to get.
Well, as a matter of fact.
I thought so. Now I'm telling you. Get off the slash D and stay off.
With his face set grimly, Jason nodded and lifted the Palomino's reins. He and Wash turned their horses and heeled them into a trot, heading back down the hill and away from the Dixon Ranch. But when they reached the bottom, Jason couldn't resist the impulse to look back. He saw that Will had stepped up onto the porch with her father and stood there beside Dixon now, just as straight and unyielding as he was.
Whatever you're thinking, son, you best forget it. That gal is all wang leather and just as tough as your old man.
Yeah, you're probably right. What do you think Matt's going to do when he hears about this?
I reckon he'll get his back up and dig in his heels and start getting ready for a fight.
He can't put up a fight. Ward's quit him. He doesn't even have anybody working for him. Dixon probably has 20 or 30 ranch hands on his spread.
Matt's got nobody right now. That don't mean he won't hire some men to help him. Folks are moving into Fury all the time now.
And some of the men who drifted into town were pretty unsavory types, Jason thought. Matt had some of the money from his father's stake left. Did he have enough to pay fighting wages? If he did, things were liable to get a lot worse before they got better. Regardless of that, Jason knew he had to let Matt know what the outcome of his visit to the Slash D had been. He and Wash swung toward the west and soon came in sight of the MacDonald Ranch House and the skeletal framework of the partially built barn. Matt heard them coming and stepped out of the house to meet them, a rifle clutched in his hands.
What do you want, Fury?
I rode out to Dixon's ranch and had a talk with him like you wanted.
I didn't want you to talk to the bastard. I wanted you to arrest him.
I told you I can't do that. But Jenny convinced me I ought to try to talk some sense into Dixon's head.
She did she? Well, that little sister of yours is a smart girl. You ought to listen to her more often.
Look, Dixon's still threatening to kill you if you don't get off this land. Why don't you think about moving? There's some good range north of the settlement, too. And maybe that would be far enough away from Dixon that he wouldn't mind.
What the hell are you talking about? He's got no legal claim to this land, you know that.
He admitted as much, but that doesn't mean anything to an old-timer like him. He'll fight for what he considers his.
So will I. You do well to remember that. If there's nothing else, I've got work to do.
Suit yourself. But I'd be mighty careful if I was you. Dixon's liable to come calling again.
Well, I'll give him a hot lead welcome if he does.
Jason just shook his head and turned his horse around. He and Wash rode away.
That boy's stubborn streak is gonna get him killed.
Yeah. I just hope a lot of other people don't wind up dead along with him.
It was early evening by the time they rode back into Fury, and another problem had occurred to Jason.
I've got to do something with those fellas I locked up earlier. The one who plugged you in the arm and his friends.
I ain't one to hold grudges. You can let them go as far as I'm concerned.
Not until I talk to Salmon about it. There ought to be a little fine or something for winging an old pelican.
Luck was with Jason. He spotted the mayor of Fury standing in front of Cohen's Hardware, talking with Saul. Salmon lifted a hand in greeting as Jason and Wash reined their mounts toward him.
Well, hello, fellas. I was just down at the marshal's office, Jason, and Ward Wanamaker told me you'd ridden out to see Ezra Dixon.
That's right. I wanted to see if I could talk some sense into his head about Matt McDonald.
Now, there's a couple of things you don't put together too often. Sense and Matt McDonald.
Dixon's the same way. Hard-headed as the day is long. And he still says that he'll kill Matt if he doesn't get off what Dixon considers his range.
I'm not all that fond of Matt, but I'd hate to see him gunned down or burned out. Maybe he's the one you ought to be talking to.
Wash and I just tried that. Matt won't budge. It's like the old saying about the irresistible force and the immovable object.
Don't reckon I've heard that one, but I can figure out what you mean. I guess the best we can hope for is that the trouble won't spill over into town. By the way, Ward told me you were talking to him about making him a deputy.
That's right. I hope I didn't overstep my bounds. I didn't promise him any wages or anything like that.
No, that's fine. Saul and I were just talking about the fact that you're going to need some help in keeping order around here. Ward's a good man for the job.
We're going to talk to all the businessmen in the settlement. They're already chipping in to pay your salary, Jason. It wouldn't cost much more for them to come up with some wages for Ward, too. Unless you'd be interested in the job, Mr. Keogh.
Me? The deputy? Oh, Lord, no. I don't mind helping Jason out every now and then, but it's because me and his pa was friends. Don't give me a badge.
All right, it's settled then. Ward will be Fury's deputy marshal. Better warn him the pay won't be much, though. It's all right with me if he works at some other jobs, as long as he's able to handle whatever you need him to do, too. Like guarding those prisoners the way he's doing now.
I'm glad you mentioned them, Salmon. What am I supposed to do with them?
Hell, I don't know. Saul, what do you think?
We haven't enacted any town ordinances yet. But surely it's got to be against the law to shoot at somebody, right?
Seems that way to me. A fella ought to have to pay a fine for that. And maybe the money should go to the gent who got shot. Seems fair enough to me.
We need to put together an actual town council so we can pass some laws. But until then, why don't you just fine that Mexican for disturbing the peace and let it go at that?
That's what I was thinking, too. He ought to be charged with attempted murder. But with no judge or court here, we'd have to take him to Tucson or Phoenix to do it.
More trouble than it's worth. I agree with Salmon. Find the man and tell him and his friends to get out of Fury and not come back.
All right. Come on, Walsh.
They led their horses to the livery stable, unsaddled them, then turned them over to the hostler for a rubdown and some grain. When they reached the marshal's office, they found Ward Wanamaker in Jason's chair, leaned back with his feet propped on the desk. Ward sat up in a hurry, but Jason motioned for him to take it easy.
We don't stand on ceremony around here. Deputy Wanamaker.
I've got the job?
That's right. Mayor Kendall and Saul Cohen thought it was a good idea. They're going to try to drum up some money to pay you, but Salmon said to warn you it may not be much.
I don't care about that. I can pick up some cash working odd jobs around town, and I don't need much to get by on.
It's a deal, then. And for your first official job, Deputy, why don't you bring those prisoners out here?
You're going to let them go?
If we keep them much longer, the town's going to have to feed them supper. We don't want that.
Ward went to the door into the cell block. He unlocked it and swung it open, then disappeared into the short hallway. He came back a minute later, herding Flores, Trumbull, and Yates ahead of him. He had his pistol in his hand, trained on their backs in case they tried anything. The three hard cases, while still angry about being locked up, cooperated.
Flores, you're being fined $25 for disturbing the peace and injuring one of Fury's citizens. You're lucky to be getting off so easy. By all rights, I could lock you up for the next couple of months.
And if I refuse to pay this fine?
Then you go back in there. And I'll let you out when I'm damn good and ready.
This is not legal.
I'm the law in Fury. If I say it's legal, then it is. And the town will back me up on it, too.
What about us?
You and Yates are free to go. You didn't do anything you could be charged with. But I'll tell you the same thing I was about to tell your friend. Get out of Fury and stay out. You're not welcome here, and if you come back, you'll wind up in jail again. Or worse.
That sounds mighty like a threat.
No threat, just some good advice. You'd be wise to follow it.
Pay the damn fine. Let's get out of here.
But it is not fair. You saw what the old Borichon did to my boots.
I don't care. We're done with this damn place. We got things to do, remember?
Si. There is your fine, Marshal.
What about our guns?
They're unloaded. Don't stop to load them until you're out of town. I'll be watching, and if you do, it'll mean more trouble.
They gave him go-to-hell looks as they buckled on their gun belts, but they didn't argue with the order. With some final cold, hostile stares, the three hard cases trooped out of the office. Jason, Wash, and Ward stepped outside to watch them leave town. All three men carried rifles now, and were ready to use them if the hard cases tried anything else. But Flores, Trumbull, and Yates just retrieved their horses from the hitch rack in front of Abigail's place, mounted up, and rode out.
Ugh, I'm glad to see those three gone.
You think they'll stay away like you told them to?
I hope so. If they don't, I reckon we'll deal with that when the time comes.
You need me for anything else tonight, Marshal?
Nope, not unless some more trouble crops up, which I'm hoping it won't.
Well, I'll be around town if it does. So long.
He's a good fella. Make you a fine deputy.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Now, about that $25 fine Flores paid.
That goes in the town coffers.
Has the town got coffers?
It does now.
Don't hardly seem right. I'm the one who got shot after all, and it sure does pain me.
If you'd leave it alone, maybe it'd stop hurting so much. Sorry, Wash, that money goes to the town. I'm going to take it over to Saul's and let him lock it up in his safe. For the time being, he'll be Fury's treasurer.
All right, I'll go see Abigail. You don't mind extending a little credit to a poor old man?
Don't drink too much.
Wash shambled off, and Jason turned back to the marshal's office. He stopped just outside the door, though, because he spotted someone walking toward him through the early evening gloom. As the figure came closer, he recognized Megan McDonald.
Jason, I'd like to talk to you.
What can I do for you, Megan?
Can we go inside?
Sure. Would you like a cup of coffee? It's been sitting in the pot so long, it's probably strong enough by now to get up and walk off on its own two legs, but...
No, that's fine. Jenny told me about what happened between Matt and that man Dixon. She said Matt was all right, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him myself while he was in town.
Well, he wasn't hurt, other than a twisted ankle. It's nothing to worry about.
What about Dixon? Is he something to worry about?
Dixon's stubborn as a mule. He thinks that the land Matt has claimed is part of his range. If Matt doesn't get off of it... There'll be trouble, all right.
Shooting trouble?
Maybe.
I was afraid of that. Jenny said you were going to talk to Dixon.
I did. It didn't do a bit of good. I had another talk with your brother, too, but it didn't change anything. They're like a couple of bulls, Megan. One young and one old, but equally determined to butt heads. Problem is, Matt's alone, while Dixon's got a tough, salty crew to help him out.
But you can help Matt. Can't you? I know you and Matt don't get along. Lord knows, sometimes he's such a fool that he drives me to distraction. But he's my brother, Jason.
I know. I'll try to think of something. There's got to be some way to work this out.
Thank you, Jason.
Megan moved closer, and Jason just sort of naturally put his hands on her shoulders. As she closed her eyes, he bent to kiss her. Megan slipped her arms around him and held him tight. The kiss lasted only a moment before she slipped out of his embrace. With a shy smile, she looked down at the floor.
Good night, Jason.
Wait a minute. I'll walk you home.
That's not necessary. I'll be fine.
She left the office, and he sat down behind the desk to rack his brain and search for solutions to the problems facing him. Much to Jason's surprise, things were pretty quiet in Fury for the next couple of weeks. The three hard cases he had run out of town didn't come back, and the simmering feud between Matt McDonald and Ezra Dixon stayed in the background, not boiling over into violence. Matt hired some men to help him finish building his barn and corrals. They were newcomers to Fury and didn't know the potential trouble they were getting into, but even when they heard about the threat from Dixon, they stayed on. Matt always had at least two men standing guard with rifles at the ready while he and the others worked. The settlement continued to grow. Fury's population was nearly 200 now, and several new businesses opened each week. A cafe, known as the Red Top because of the Spanish tiles that formed its roof, was a welcome addition to the town. A couple of saloons opened, giving Abigail Crimp some competition. Several wagon trains rolled along the nearby trail, stopping to stock up on provisions and other supplies before they continued on to California. Saul Cohen and Randall Nordstrom did a booming business from the immigrant trade. A town council was formed to go along with the mayor, giving Fury a governing body. They passed several ordinances, including one that said no firearms were to be discharged in town, and levied a small tax on the businesses to pay for Jason's and Ward's wages. The mayor and council members served as volunteers, working for free, so the wages for the lawmen were the town's only real expense so far. Wash shook his head ruefully as they walked along the street toward the marshal's office.
This town's done taking its first steps on the road to ruin, boy. A bunch of laws and taxes are the plumb ruination of everything good about a place.
That's just part of civilization, Wash.
You done made my point. Civilization ain't natural. It always gets so big and fat that sooner or later it comes crashing down because of its own weight. Might not be in our lifetimes, mind you, but it'll happen. Mark my words. Hell, if Fury gets much bigger, I'm gonna have to leave. It's already getting too crowded around. Hey, who the hell's that?
Wash came to an abrupt halt, and Jason stopped walking beside him. Jason saw what Wash had just seen. Four men were riding along Fury's main street toward them, strangers who held themselves loose and easy in their saddles. Their heads didn't move much, but their eyes did, always alert and watchful. That was a sure sign of men who were accustomed to trouble. The strangers bristled with guns, too. A couple of them sported two Colts apiece, and rifle butts stuck up from saddle boots on all four horses. The men's jaws were beard stubbled, and their rough clothes were covered with dust. From the looks of them, they had been on the trail for quite a while. Jason veered toward the strangers. Wash's shorter legs hurried to keep up with him.
Best be careful, son. Those hombres look like they've been to see the elephant and shot it when they got there.
The strangers had a hard-bitten, dangerous look about them, no doubt about that. The man in the lead had a black hat thrown back on a thatch of curly, sandy-colored hair. And even though he smiled as Jason approached, his pale blue eyes remained cold and hard as flint. Jason knew that the man had spotted the badge on his shirt as he pulled back on the reins and brought his mount to a halt.
Howdy, Sheriff.
It's Marshal. Marshal Jason Fury.
Pleased to meet you. Name's Bill Rye. This is Jack Dupree. They call him Three Finger Jack. Ned Potter and Nib Sloan.
What brings you to Fury?
Town's got the same name as you, eh, Marshal? They must think highly of you around here.
It was named after my father, and you didn't answer my question, Mr. Rye.
Yeah, that's right, I didn't. We're looking for somebody, a man named of Matt McDonald. You know this fellow McDonald, Marshal?
What's your business with him?
Some might say that what we want with McDonald is our business, Marshal, not yours. But I'm feeling friendly today, so I'll tell you. McDonald sent for us. We're going to work for him.
McDonald's out at his ranch. I'll show you where it is.
Much obliged, but you don't have to trouble yourself. You just tell us where to find it.
I'll show you. There's no trouble.
Yeah, you suit yourself. Don't make no never mind us.
Wait here. I'll get my horse.
As Jason turned and walked toward the livery stable, Wash hurried alongside him.
Them fellas is gunfighters, Jason. Matt's gone and hired himself some shootists.
I know. Find Ward and tell him to keep an eye on things here in town while I'm gone.
Sure. You know what's gonna happen once Dixon hears about this, don't you?
I know. Matt just raised the stakes in this game.
Cleo had been favoring one leg the past few days, so Jason left the Palomino mare in her stall at the stable and saddled up Gumption, his father's old blue roan, instead. Gumption was something of a plodder, but still strong, and Jason didn't figure he would need Cleo's speed on this trip out to Matt's ranch and back. Wash insisted on coming with him after he had passed along Jason's message to Ward Wanamaker.
It's possible that fellow is lying, and what they're really after is killing Matt. You might need a hand stopping him.
Jason tried to persuade Wash to stay in town, but in the end, the old-timer was beside him as they rode back to join Rye, Dupree, Potter, and Sloan.
I still say you don't have to go out there with us, Marshal.
I'm going.
You lead the way, then.
They rode out. On the way, Jason spotted Megan and Jenny, together as they usually were. The two young women looked puzzled and more than a little worried at the sight of Jason and Wash leaving town with four hard-looking strangers. The girls might have a right to be worried, Jason thought. He had no idea what was going to happen when they reached Matt's ranch. Bill Rye was a friendly sort, at least on the surface, talking and asking questions about the country hereabouts and making jokes. His eyes never warmed up, though. The other men remained as sullen and taciturn as they had been when they rode into Fury. The riders were about halfway to Matt McDonald's place when Rye turned to Jason.
There's some fellas dug in our trail, Marshal. You know anything about that? Ask somebody to follow along and keep an eye on us, did you?
Were you sure?
Sure enough. They're staying out of sight most of the time, being careful not to get skylighted. The boys and I don't take kindly to being double-crossed.
Well, I don't know anything about any double-cross. And whoever's back there, I didn't have anything to do with it. They're probably Ezra Dixon's men. They spotted us and want to know who we are. Dixon doesn't like people riding on what he considers his range.
Seems like I heard something about that. I'll take your word for it, Marshal.
They rode on, and by the time they reached Matt's ranch, Jason had spotted the men trailing them, too. He was more convinced than ever that they were some of Dixon's men, the way they hung back, spying, but never approaching too close. Someone at the ranch must have seen them coming, because Matt and his hired hands were ready for them. No one was in sight when Jason, Wash, and the four strangers rode in and reined to a halt.
Nobody move! You're covered!
Jason looked around and spotted the barrel of a rifle protruding from the hayloft door in the barn. More rifle barrels poked from open windows in the house, and a man leaned into view behind a corner of the building, also peering at them over the barrel of a rifle.
Folks around here always this glad to see strangers?
Matt! Matt McDonald! Show yourself!
The front door swung back. Jason saw movement inside, but Matt hung back in the shadows inside the house. The barrel of the rifle he held was the only thing readily visible.
Oh, what do you want, Fury? Who are those men with you?
Well, you tell me. According to them, you're the one they're looking for.
McDonald, I'm Bill Rye. This is three-finger Jack Dupree, Nib Sloan, and Ned Potter with me. You wrote me a letter. Caught up to me in Denver.
Rye? You got proof of that?
Yeah, I've got that letter you wrote.
The gunman took a folded piece of paper from his shirt pocket and tossed it onto the porch at Matt's feet.
Take a look at it if you don't believe me.
Matt pointed the rifle at Rye with his right hand while he bent and picked up the paper with his left. He flapped it back and forth until it opened and finally took his eyes off the gunman to look at the words written on it. Jason could see the tension ease in Matt's body as he recognized the letter.
It's the one I sent you, all right. They're all right. I hired them.
You haven't hired us yet. We came to talk business, sure, but we don't have a deal yet.
Come on inside, then. We'll discuss it. What are you doing here, Fury?
These fellas rode into town looking for you. They didn't say what for, so I thought I ought to come along.
I don't think your friend the Marshal trusted us, McDonald. Reckon he thought we might mean you some harm.
So you were looking out for my best interests, huh? Well, that's a welcome change, seeing as how you turned your back on me when Dixon attacked me the first time.
I explained to you why I couldn't do anything about that. And I went to talk to Dixon. That was more meddling than I should have done.
Take your so-called meddling and go to hell. I don't need your help anymore, Fury.
Because you're planning to hire these gunslingers?
Next time Dixon tries to give me trouble, he'll get a mighty warm welcome.
Maybe we better settle our business first.
Rye and the other men dismounted, looped their reins around a hitching post that Matt had put up in front of the porch, and climbed the steps.
I guess we're not needed here anymore, Wash.
Never were.
Tight-lipped, Jason turned Gumption around and heeled the blue roan into an easy lope. Wash followed, moving up alongside as they left the ranch.
Ain't no good gonna come from this. When Dixon finds out the boys hired him some gunslingers, it'll just start the ball that much sooner.
I'm afraid you're right.
Megan was waiting for Jason in the marshal's office when he got back to town.
Thank God you're all right, Jason. Who are those men I saw you with earlier? They look like outlaws.
Next thing to it, they're hired guns. Hired by your brother to fight Ezra Dixon. Unless I miss my guess.
Oh no. That's just gonna make things worse, isn't it?
Hard to say, but chances are it's not gonna make things any better.
What can we do?
Nothing. Wait to see what happens.
Maybe I should go out there and try to talk to Matt.
I'd feel better about things if you'd stay here in town, Megan. You don't need to go to the ranch.
He's my brother. I can't just abandon him to whatever fate is waiting for him, even if he is bringing it down on his own head.
I understand that. Just give it a few days. That's all I'm asking.
All right. But the next time Matt comes into town, I'm going to corner him and give him a piece of my mind.
You do that.
No matter what Megan might say to her brother, though, Jason didn't think it was going to do any good. Events had already been set in motion. Like an avalanche rolling down a hill, they couldn't be stopped. And like an avalanche, they would wipe out whoever was unlucky enough to be in their way. When the explosion came, it wasn't out on the range, either at Matt's place or at Ezra Dixon slash D. It was in town, just as Jason had feared it might be. A man from Tucson named Alf Blodgett had driven into Fury a few days earlier in a big wagon loaded with barrels of beer and whiskey. A couple of smaller wagons followed him, one full of tables and chairs, the other one packed with women who leaned out, smiled, waved, and called to the men in the streets, promising them all manner of delights. The ample flesh that was displayed in their low-cut gowns made its own promises. Blodgett had operated a saloon in Tucson for several years before deciding to move to Fury. From England originally, he was a burly man almost as white as he was tall, with a head as bald as an egg except for handlebar mustaches that curled up on the ends. He called his establishment the Crown and Garter and referred to it as a pub, but it was a frontier saloon, pure and simple, dedicated to the simple proposition that the quickest way to separate a customer from his money was to get him drunk, get him laid, and get him out. Reverend Melcher and his wife Lavinia and some of the other respectable folks in Fury weren't happy about the arrival of Alf Blodgett, but they hadn't been happy about Abigail Crimp either. And to tell the truth, Reverend Melcher could have done without the Cohen family too, despite the fact that Saul was a member of the town council and one of the most tireless workers on behalf of the settlement. To the Reverend, a Hebrew was a Hebrew, no matter what else he might do, and as such deserved to be driven out from civilized society like the Christ killer he was. Luckily for all concerned, especially anybody who used the water from the well that Saul had helped to dig, the Reverend Mr. Melcher was mostly bluster. Only a few people took him seriously, even though he had been the one who put the original wagon train together. It took Blodgett about a day to get his saloon set up and open for business. After that, he had a steady stream of customers in and out of the place. Jason was sitting in a straight-backed chair just outside the door of the marshal's office when he saw several cowboys ride into town. He recognized them as some of Dixon's men, recalling them from his visit to the Slash D. One of them was Ord Kirby, Dixon Segundo. They stopped in front of Blodgett's place, dismounted and tied their horses to a hitch rack, and went into the Crown and Garter. It was possible that some of the Slash D hands had been in Fury before, since Jason didn't know all of them. This was the first time he was sure that some of Dixon's men were in town. Jason put his hands on his knees and pushed himself to his feet, intending to walk down to Blodgett and step inside, just to keep an eye on Kirby and the other cowboys. Before he could get there, four men trotted their horses into the settlement and reined to a halt in front of the new saloon. Jason's heart pounded a little harder when he recognized Bill Rye, Jack Dupree, Ned Potter, and Nib Sloan. Since he hadn't seen the gunmen around since leaving them at Matt's house several days earlier, he hoped that they hadn't been able to make a deal with Matt and had drifted on out of the area. Obviously, they were still here, and that wasn't good. Even worse was the fact that they strode into the Crown and Garter, where Dixon's men were. Jason wondered where Ward Wanamaker was. He might need Ward's help if trouble broke out. Unfortunately, there was no time to go looking for the part-time deputy. Jason felt urgency dogging him as he hurried down to Blodgett's. The Englishman had put up some bat wings in the door of his place. Jason pushed them aside and stepped into the saloon. Folks were scrambling up from the tables and getting out of the line of fire as Ord Kirby and Bill Rye stood in front of the bar facing each other, about 15 feet apart. The front of Kirby's shirt was wet, as if something had been splattered on it, and Jason knew right away without asking what had happened. Rye had come up beside the slashed Di Segundo and jostled his arm accidentally, making Kirby spill his drink. Kirby had taken offense at that, just as Rye had known he would, and now the two men were facing each other on the verge of a gunfight.
I said it was an accident. I won't say any more than that.
You'll apologize for being such a clumsy damn bastard. Nobody spills a drink on me and gets away with it.
If you're offended, there's one way to settle this. You're packing iron, and so am I.
Don't think I won't draw, because I will, by God. I know you're one of those fancy gunslingers working for McDonald, but I don't give a damn. I'm pretty slick with a gun myself.
If you want to prove that, you've got it to do.
Nobody's doing anything. Both of you settle down. I mean it.
No law against a man defending himself if he's drawed on, is there, Marshal?
Nobody's drawing a gun. There's an ordinance against shooting off firearms in town.
With an exception for self-defense, I imagine. I can't see any jury convicting a man who was just trying to keep himself from getting shot when the other fellow drew first. Isn't that true, Marshal?
Back off, Fury. I can take care of myself. I don't need your help.
The only man's help you'll need if you don't forget about this is the Undertaker. Rye said it was an accident. Let it go at that.
No, sir. He's got to apologize like the boot-licking scum he is.
How much more of this do I have to take, Marshal?
You started it.
No, but I'll finish it if that gutless coward ever stops flapping his gums.
By God, that's enough!
Kirby clawed at the butt of his gun. Ord grabbed hold of the bar, keeping himself on his feet as he struggled to lift his gun. Kirby's head jerked as the bullet caught him in the forehead. His gun slid out of his hand, unfired. If the rest of the slashed D hands had any thoughts about avenging their Segundo, they had to abandon them. Guns had appeared as if by magic in the hands of Rye's companions.
For God's sake, everybody, hold your fire!
Ward stepped through the bat wings, gripping a shotgun.
It's me, Jason. I got here as fast as I could after somebody told me there was about to be a shootout in here. I got a greener here if I need it.
If Ward touched off both barrels of that scatter gun, innocent folks were bound to get hurt, maybe even killed.
Hold on, Ward.
Slowly and deliberately, Jason drew his pistol.
Rye, give me your gun. You're under arrest.
I don't think so. Everybody in here saw that hombre draw first.
Ord never had a chance against you, mister. You pushed him into drawing. It was murder, plain and simple.
Yeah, that's right.
Not in the eyes of the law. And assure you how confident I am of that.
Rye lowered his gun, turned, and held the weapon out toward Jason. But first...
I changed my mind, Marshal. I'll take my chances on being arrested.
Jason knew he couldn't make the charges stick against the gunman, but right now the main thing he wanted was to get Rye and the other gunslingers out of here, so the situation would be defused and nobody else would have to die. He took Rye's gun.
Come on. We'll go down to the Marshal's office. Dupree, Sloan, Potter, you men come along too.
Oh, don't you worry about that. We ain't letting Bill out our side. We know how folks in these little towns like to liquor themselves up and start a lynch mob.
There'll be no lynchings in Fury. Not while I'm alive.
Jason and Ward were able to get Ryan and the other gunmen out of the Crown and Garter and march them down to the Marshal's office in jail without any more shots ringing out. Once they were inside the office, with the door closed behind them, Rye held out his hand.
I'll take my gun back now, Marshal.
Not just yet.
Don't even think about trying to lock us up, Marshal. The boys and me don't cotton to being behind bars.
Our cells don't have any bars, but I'm not going to lock you up. I just want you to sit down in here and wait a while until things in town cool down a little.
Until those cowboys leave, you mean?
That's right. Once they've head back to the Slash D, then you and your friends can get out of town and go back to McDonald's place. I assume you're still working for him?
That's right.
I had hoped that you didn't reach a deal with him and left this part of the country.
No such luck for me, Marshal. McDonald's gonna have a nice spread out there. I reckon we'll stick with him for a while.
Ward, you mind staying here and keeping an eye on these men? I'm going back down to the Crown and Garter to see what's going on there.
Go ahead, Marshal. I'll be fine.
You gonna head off any lynch talk, Marshal?
I told you, there won't be any lynchings in Fury.
We'll hold you to that.
Jason left the office and paused. Quite a few people were still on the street. The shooting had drawn them out, and they hadn't gone about their business yet. Knots of townspeople gathered together talking, and Jason didn't have to guess what the subjects of the discussions were. The citizens were talking about the killing in Alf Blodgett's new saloon. Jason saw Cyrus Valentine's wagon parked in front of the Crown and Garter. Valentine had been there a week, having moved down from Phoenix to set up an undertaking parlor. While Jason watched, Cyrus came out of the saloon along with his helper, each of them at one end of a blanket-wrapped bundle. Jason knew that inside that blanket was the body of Ord Kirby. Carefully, the men placed the body in the back of the wagon and drew a canvas cover over it. Then they climbed onto the driver's seat. Cyrus took up the reins and flapped them to get the two mules moving. He drove at a slow, dignified pace toward the undertaking parlor. The four slashed-y cowboys who had been with Kirby emerged from the saloon. One of them went to the hitch rack and tied his horse, swung up into the saddle, and raced out of town at a gallop. Jason had no doubts about where the man was going. He was headed for the Slash D to tell Ezra Dixon what had happened to his Segundo. Two of the remaining men followed Cyrus Valentine's wagon down the street, while the fourth man angled toward Jason. His face was still flushed with anger.
Did you lock up that murdering gunslinger?
He's in the marshal's office, so are the others.
But I bet they ain't behind bars, are they?
We don't have any bars on the cells, but they're not locked up, no. Kirby drew first. There's no getting around that.
What are you gonna do? Fine that bastard $5 for firing off a gun in town and let him go?
You just let me and the mayor and the town council take care of that. That's how things are going to be handled in this town. We'll do everything the law allows.
You must come from back east or somewhere, mister. If you lived out here on the frontier for very long, you know that law ain't always the same thing as justice. We'll just see what happens once the boss and the rest of the crew get here. Then you'll see some justice.
I told you, there won't be any lynchings in my town. Why don't you move along?
Public street, ain't it?
I guess so.
Then I reckon I'll just wait right here until the boss gets to town.
Suit yourself.
What's going on out there, Jason? Why's that fellow from the Slash D just standing there?
Well, I can tell you that, Deputy. He's watching to make sure we don't get away.
Rye's right. One of them rode hell for leather out of town. I'm sure he's headed for the Slash D. The other two are down at the Undertaker's, but that's not far enough away. They'll come running if there's trouble.
Let us go, Marshal. Those three cowboys are no match for us. Your new Undertaker will be mighty pleased with the amount of work he's getting.
Stay right there, damn it! I'll figure out something.
It's your friends, Jason. Let us in.
Trying not to sigh in relief, Jason went to the door and swung it open. Saul stood there along with Selman, Nordstrom, and the other members of the town council. Wash Keogh was with the group as well. Each one of the men carried either a rifle or a shotgun.
We've heard what's going on and we've come to help.
I appreciate it, Saul, but you fellas need to go back to your homes and businesses. Taking care of trouble like this is my job, not yours.
And mine.
But there are only two of you. God knows how many men Dixon will bring to town with him.
However many, we'll deal with them. Dixon will back down quickly enough when he realizes that I won't stand for any lawlessness. You don't seem to understand what you're looking at here, Rye. Dixon may have 20 or 30 men with him. If he doesn't want to be stopped, I can't stop him. None of us can.
20 or 30 cowhands don't amount to much. Even the toughest of them won't be as good with a gun as all of us three are. If there's any shooting, Dixon will die first. And when half a dozen more of them have gone down with our lead in them, the rest will quit. You just wait and see.
What if you're wrong?
Then I reckon we'll die. But that won't matter to Dixon because he'll be in hell before us. And it's not like all four of us haven't gambled our lives before now.
Can't be the Slash D. Ain't been time for them to get here.
Marshal, you in there with them damn killers? Come on out. I'm here to see justice done.
At least that settles the question of whether or not we'll be leaving you and Ward here on your own, Jason. We're part of this now.
Be ready for trouble. But nobody starts shooting unless and until I do.
You're the marshal.
Jason started to draw his gun, then decided not to. No point in forcing Dixon to a confrontation any sooner than necessary. Jason opened the door and stepped out of the office, forcing his face to remain set in calm lines. Ezra Dixon sat there on a long-legged, raw-boned roan horse, leaning forward with an outraged expression on his flushed, hatchet-like face. Jason was expecting that, but he was a little surprised to see Will mounted beside her father on the black stallion he had seen her breaking that day on the Slash D. She rode astride like a man, of course. Jason couldn't imagine her riding any other way, and wore denim trousers and a denim jacket over a homespun shirt. The neck strap of her flat-crowned brown hat was taut under her chin. Her dark hair hung down her back in a long braid. And like her father, she wore a holstered revolver and seemed itching to use it. Unlike Dixon, though, tears shone in Will's eyes. They were the only feminine touch about her at the moment. Jason didn't see the cowboy who had gone galloping out of the settlement after the shootout between Ryan and Kirby, but half a dozen other slashty hands were with Dixon and Will. They must have been on their way to town when they ran into the messenger bearing news of Kirby's death. Dixon had probably sent that cowboy galloping onto the ranch to fetch reinforcements.
Marshal.
Mr. Dixon, I won't beat around the bush. I know why you're here. You've heard that Ord Kirby was killed in the gunfight.
You call it a gunfight? I call it plain murder. That fella who killed Ord is one of MacDonald's hired guns. Ord was never no match for a snake-blooded skunk like that.
No, he wasn't. That's why he shouldn't have drawn on Rye.
That bastard didn't give him no choice.
People always have a choice.
If you believe that boy, you're even dumber than I thought you were.
What is it you want?
You know good and well what I want. If you ain't gonna see that justice is done, I'll handle it myself.
By stringing up Rye from one of those cottonwoods beside the creek?
That's what a killer like him deserves.
You ordered your men to kill Matt McDonald and Ward Wanamaker that day you tried to burn down Matt's house.
That's different, blast it. They was squatting on my range. They had it coming.
In other words, you're a law unto yourself. Well, not in this settlement, Dixon. You might as well get used to the idea that there's real law and order and fury, and there'll be no lynch mobs here as long as I'm the marshal.
Then maybe it's time you ain't the marshal anymore, you high and mighty little...
The only ones who can remove Jason Fury from the job of marshal are me and the town council. In case you didn't know it, Mr. Dixon, I'm Salmon Kendall, the mayor of this settlement, and I don't appreciate you coming in here and trying to run roughshod over us.
Nor do I. Saul Cohen, owner of the hardware store over there. I could use your business, Mr. Dixon. That's why I'd hate to have to shoot you.
One by one, the other citizens who had come to the marshal's office to help Jason stepped out of the building, leaving only Ward Wanamaker inside to watch over Ryan, the other gunman. The citizens' faces were grim and set with determination.
Damn it! Can't you see there's a girl here? She's liable to get hurt.
You're the one who brought her with you.
Don't talk about me like I'm a child. My father didn't bring me here. When we heard what happened to Ord, I wouldn't let him leave me behind.
That's right. You and Kirby were sweet on each other. I'm sorry for your loss, Miss Dixon.
Oh, for God's sake. Ord Kirby may have had a crush on me, but I wasn't sweet on him. But he was a friend. And more than that, he rode for the Slash D. That's all that really matters.
We've got a standoff here. Maybe you can get past us and get to Rye and the others, but even if you do, then you'll have them to deal with. There's a good chance none of you will make it out of here alive, Dixon. Including your daughter. I don't want that. I don't want anybody else to die. One killing is enough for today.
That ain't right. It just ain't right.
Maybe not, but that's the way it is. Turn around and ride out of here. Let the law handle this situation.
The law? You ain't gonna do anything to that killer.
Kirby drew first. Those are the plain, simple facts of the matter.
Ain't nothing plain and simple about this. All right. If that's the way it is, then I reckon I know what to do.
What?
Since it's all right with the law for MacDonald to hire himself some killers, I figure it'll be all right for me to do the same thing.
You don't want to do that. It'll just make things worse.
No. I'll just make sure it's done all legal-like. The fellas I hire won't draw first. That's all you care about, ain't it, Marshal?
This town doesn't need any more gunslingers.
Well, it's gonna get 'em. MacDonald wants a real war? I'll give him a real war, by God.
And with that, Dixon wheeled his horse and put the spurs to the roan, sending it leaping ahead in a gallop. He rode out of town with his men following him. The only one left behind was Will. She stayed where she was, glaring at a dumbfounded Jason.
You don't realize what a big mistake you've made by protecting those killers, Marshal. I talked my father into leaving McDonald alone for the time being. I told him he should wait a while until we had a chance to see how things were going to play out. Well, we've seen all right.
Why would you do that? Why would you get him to lay off McDonald?
Because I didn't want to see him get hurt. I didn't want any of our men hurt. I wasn't sure McDonald was worth it. But he's raised the stakes now, Marshal, and there won't be any turning back. When my pa says there'll be war, he means it.
Miss Dixon.
Will just shook her head, jerked her horse around, and heeled the big black into a run. She galloped out of town, trailing her father and the hands from the Slash D.
Well, that could have gone better, I suppose. But it could have gone worse, too. At least nobody else is dead.
Yet. $100 fine for discharging a firearm in town.
That's kind of steep, ain't it?
The marshal sets the fines and the town council backs him up on that. Ain't that right, boys?
Correct, Mr. Mayor.
Sure, whatever you say.
Rye took five $20 gold pieces from his pocket and made a neat stack of them on Jason's desk.
There you go, Marshal. Now I want a receipt saying that I paid in full.
Fighting to keep his hands from shaking in anger, Jason wrote out the paper and handed it to Rye.
There's your damn receipt.
Seems like I'm being a good citizen about this, Marshal. I'm not sure why you're mad at me.
Stay out of fury, all of you. You're not welcome in this settlement.
Well, you can't do that. We got a right to...
And the owners of every business in town have a right to refuse your trade. I can assure you, that's exactly what they'll do. So, you see, there's no reason for you to visit this settlement.
I'll arrest you if you set foot in town and figure out the charges later. Now get out, all of you.
None of this is over. Not the business with Dixon, and not our business with you, Marshal.
Watch them and make sure they actually leave town.
Sure. What if Dixon and his men ambush them after they ride out?
That's their problem. So I'll get that fine money and put it away in your safe.
Sure, Jason. You did the best you could. It's a miracle there wasn't more bloodshed.
That's right. You've proven that we did the right thing by making you Marshal.
Jason still wasn't sure he had done the right thing by accepting. The bloody massacre that had nearly taken place today might have been postponed, but it hadn't been prevented yet. Like a storm on the horizon, violence could still break out at any time. And if it was bad enough, it might wash away the town of Fury and everyone in it.